You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Veronica Rickert. Coming up, we're just over a week away from Election Day. Wisconsin voters will be weighing in on national and statewide races and on local school referendums. We'll talk to a guest from the Wisconsin Rural Schools Alliance and find out why rural districts are going to the voters for more funding.
First, has your workplace ever sounded a little like the company in the movie Office Space?
Yeah, you apparently didn't put one of the new cover sheets on your TPS reports.
Oh, yeah. I'm sorry about that. I forgot.
Yeah. You see, we're putting the cover sheets on all TPS reports now before they go out. Did you see the memo about this?
Yeah, I have the memo right here. I just forgot. But it's not shipping out till tomorrow, so there's no problem.
Yeah. If you could just go ahead and make sure you do that from now on, that would be great. And I'll go ahead and make sure you get another copy of that memo. Okay?
Yeah, I have the memo. I've got it. It's right.
There it is, a smart employee in a knowledgeable, and rather a knowledge economy job, spending all of his time following mindless procedures. Our next guest says it's not just in the movies. Many organizations really do reinforce stupid, mindless behavior, even though they hire lots of smart, creative people.
Andre Spicer joins us now. He's professor of organizational behavior at Cass Business School, City University London. He's co-author of the new book, The Stupidity Paradox, The Power and Pitfalls of Functional Stupidity at Work. Andre, thanks so much for joining us today.
Word up.
Spell out, Andre, the stupidity paradox, if you will. An organization hires smart, often creative people, and then what happens on the job?
Well, what normally happens is that organizations want to look good, right? So they hire a lot of smart people who have, you know, very high IQs, and they also have great degrees from Ivy League schools. They get them into the job, and then guess what happens? They don't get them to think. So they basically encourage them not to use their mind. It's amazing.
And it's this concept of functional stupidity you talk about. Functional stupidity, what is that?
So the idea with functional stupidity, so you get this image of the stupid worker at work, right? So it's the kind of Homer Simpson or the kind of Charlie Chaplin in modern times. You know, the guy's fooling around, making a lot of problems. But that's not the reality of stupidity these days in organizations. The reality is that you've actually got pretty smart people who know what's going on. And what then happens is that they go to work, they try and use their brains, they try and ask tough questions, make some comments, and their boss or even their coworkers actually say, hey, stop doing that, it's wasting our time, don't think about it, do about it. And guess what? These people are smart, so they don't ask those questions. They think, okay, if I want to get ahead in this kind of workplace, then guess what? I'm going to be pretty stupid as well.
And you write, this isn't just trivial. As one example, talk about the financial meltdown in 2008 as an example of functional stupidity. You had these big banks. They were making money doing things, but it was all built on a lot of bad loans. People knew they were bad loans. The people who were asking the questions were basically told, as you're kind of saying, to shut up, making money in the short term. This really cost us, didn't it?
Well, it's not even that the people knew what was going on, right? So I work in the English version of Wall Street, so in the middle of the City of London. There's three big financial capitals in the world, Wall Street, the City of London, and Japan, in Tokyo. So I work in the middle of one of those, in London here. And if you go and speak with the people working in the banks, these people are really smart. They've hired quantum physicists, all of these really, really intelligent people, put them to work building all sorts of financial assets. And when you speak with these people and say, did you know what you were doing? They said, no one understood. No one knew what was going on. And that sort of was one of the greatest shocks of my life when I moved to start working in the City of London, that you realize no one knew what was going on. The regulator didn't know. The people designing these assets didn't know. The people investing in the assets didn't know. And sure as hell, the people who were actually investing in them, you know, such as you and I and our pension plans, we had no bloody idea whatsoever.
So how do organizations get to this place where they're you know, they keep doing what they've been doing because it works in the short run, but nobody is really making those fundamental or challenging those fundamental assumptions.
So what happens normally is so there's kind of three dynamics going on initially. So first of all, smart people realize when being smart doesn't pay off, so they switch off their brains. Second thing is that their co-workers begin to say, don't think too much, switch off the brain. Number three, their boss, right? Their boss begins thinking, okay, so this guy's creating too much trouble, stop it. And guess what? Their brains get switched off. So that kind of they do it in the short term, and they get paid off for it, right? They get the promotions, they move up the hierarchy, everything's looking good for them. But in the long term, it begins to create problems because those smart people have seen the problems happening, they've seen what's going on, and then they haven't pointed it out. They know, okay, there's a problem which is going to occur here, but they've just sort of moved on from it. So as a result, these problems occur. So let me give you just one example. Is that
sure,
okay?
Sure, yeah, definitely.
Yeah, okay. So one example of this is Nokia, right? And Nokia used to be the world's biggest mobile phone maker, about 40% of the market in the world, this tiny Finnish company. You know, I think up in your part of the world, there's some Finnish people by background, is that right?
Up north especially, you bet.
Yeah, exactly. So these guys are ingenious. They know what to do, particularly when there's some snow and cold weather. So they think, okay, so let's start doing something. So they started making boots, and then they moved into making mobile phones eventually. They became the world's biggest mobile phone maker. And they kept on doing this, 40% of the market. But then Apple came out with the iPhone. And the iPhone was a big challenge. It was moving from just normal mobile phones to smartphones. And Nokia knew what was coming, but they didn't really question it. They didn't sort of think, okay, what are we going to do? And they had a mobile phone operating system they were developing. And everyone in the company knew this mobile phone operating system that Nokia was developing was rubbish. They kept on doing it, and they kept on doing it. All the middle managers kept on doing it. They knew it wasn't going to work. And no one pushed up the bad message because in that company, the main thing that you had to do was to be positive, to give a good message. And if you weren't positive, your division got closed down. So guess what? Everyone kept on pushing up this positive message, and the senior managers, people at the top, didn't realize the system they were developing just wasn't going to work. And 1 year down the track, Apple, Samsung, that overtaken Nokia by far. Nokia had fallen behind. And so if you look where these two companies are now, Samsung, Apple, number one and two mobile phone makers in the world, Nokia doesn't even make mobile phones.
Talking to Andre Spicer, co-author of the new book, The Stupidity Paradox. So, Andre, what is a company or a university or a school or whatever organization? You say this covers a lot of ground, The Stupidity Paradox.
Oh,
what
yeah.
can a company or organization do to, you use the phrase, and I love this, de-stupidify?
Okay, so there's a few things we can do. Number one, we have lots of PAs, you know, personal assistants. Why not appoint a few DAs? Devil's advocates. So these would be the people whose job it is to just say, I don't know about that, question it, ask some questions around it. There's a lot of psychological research that shows in a group, if you have someone who questions what's going on, they tend to take a longer time to come to a decision, but the decision they make at the end of the day is better. A second thing they could do is appoint some outsiders. So sometimes outsiders, whether that's new recruits or other people, come to it and they see a different perspective on the world. A third thing that we think that they could do is to engage in what we call pre-mortem. So, you know, post-mortem is that you look at the body when they die. The pre-mortem is that you look at what's going to go wrong before the body dies. So look at what's going to go wrong before the project dies. So it's pretty simple. So you begin a project, you get smart people around the table who have done it before, and you say, let's imagine in 2, 3, 4 years, this project has been a disaster. Things have gone wrong big time. And then you ask them, what's gone wrong? And if you have smart people around the table, they'll sit and shake their heads and write down a long list of things that go wrong. You talk about it and you identify things and you say, how can we fix that? So this has two effects. Number one, it helps you to see around corners, identify what's going to go wrong. Number two, it helps you to basically say, it helps you to bring down your level of wishful thinking. Most of us think that a project is going to take half as long and cost half as much as it actually costs. I think the third, the final thing you could do, I think, is that we need to change our culture. So you're still there, right?
Yep.
Okay. So we live in a stupidity oriented culture. I've been watching your presidential debates at 2 a.m. every morning here in London. I love it. And but one of the things we could do is that we don't have enough time in our lives to think. The first thing we do when we face a moment to think is that we pick up our mobile phones, our smartphones, and look at them. The University of Virginia did an experiment recently where they said, just sit and think for 5 minutes to the experimental subjects, 100 people. Most people would prefer to sit and electrocute themselves rather than sit and think for 5 minutes. There was one guy who sat and electrocuted himself for 100 times in 5 minutes. So I've started an experiment, and I would encourage your listeners there in Wisconsin to go out and do this as well, called pop-up philosophy. All you do, get a deck chair, go outside there in the cold winter, two deck chairs maybe, and put them down with a little board saying, pop-up philosophy, stop, sit down, and just think. And you'll be amazed, the people who sit down and think. I've done this outside of the stock exchange, big banks, the parliament, and there's loads of people who just stop for 5 minutes and think for 5 minutes. It doesn't matter what they're thinking. You're just giving them a space to think about it for a second.
Have you worked with anybody to try to do that on an organizational level? Say, hey, investment firm, you need a thinking zone away from all the distractions?
No, it's a new idea.
Brand new.
Yeah, exactly. I've been doing it for the last 3 weeks. So I'd love to see what happens outside of my little world here in London. So if any of your listeners in Wisconsin want to find it, you know, want to do that, it's cheap. Just get two deck chairs or whatever, go out there, try it out, and see who stops and thinks.
And people are stopping and thinking along with you?
Exactly. So, for instance, I had hedge funders, I had startup tech firm people, I had someone who ran a tourist photography business. I had the person who didn't stop was a homeless woman who came by and said, I don't have time for this, and then ran off.
Fair enough.
So, I think, honestly, the university is probably the major place this is needed. Sometimes we think that universities are like hyper-thinking spaces, but often people spend a lot more time thinking about, like, how do I get my next publication or whatever, rather than actually thinking.
Andre, you've given us a lot to think about. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you.
That's Andre Spicer, co-author of the book The Stupidity Paradox. He says businesses, universities, and other organizations practice functional stupidity. You can share your thoughts, maybe your experiences to the contrary, or experiences with the stupidity paradox itself. Head over to the Central Time Facebook page.